Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is an extra special, amazing episode. Right now, we are meeting with a group of people who come from a variety of backgrounds and have a ton of different experiences in the lifestyle. It's a social club of open relationships, and the website is dvsynergy.org. Okay, I'm going to say that one more time because there's a big gap. Okay, so dvsynergy.org. So this is a collection of people who have a variety of different experiences, but the commonality is open relationships. And first, I'm going to just talk a little bit about the history of the lifestyle in the last couple decades. And then after that, we're going to open it up to everybody, and they're free to say whatever they want about whatever they want. Except maybe not the weather. I don't know. If you really want to, I'm fine with that. But I think y'all got way more interesting things to talk about. All right. So the idea of open relationships encompasses a lot of different things and things that aren't necessarily even the same in practice. So you've got polyamory, you've got swinging, you've got a variety of different ways in which people have more than one partner. The history of human relationships is really more about polygyny and polyamory than it is about monogamy. And the idea that humans are inherently monogamous is an invention, really, of the last couple hundred years. Historically, the number of partners you had was limited by the amount of money that you had. Quite frankly. And in ancient times, before we were necessarily quite civilized, if you want to put that nomenclature on it, we paired up for as long as we needed to. And then your pair lasted for as long as was useful to both of you. And you weren't necessarily exclusive. And the reason that we have things like divorce rates after predictable amounts of times, 2 years, 7 years, 20 years, because in those amounts of time, you can rear one child to be old enough to walk around, two children to be old enough to walk around, or several children, and then you can move on with your lives. But the idea of modern open relationships, also brand new. This is also an invention we've come to. We are beyond the point of talking about how we lived in caves. We're all way past that. We have microwaves, you know, we're in real life. But it doesn't mean that we have to conform to what our society has decided so far is the civilized thing to do, which is you pair up with one person for forever and you like it very much. Thank you. What we know about swinging and open relationships is very limited. The idea of researching it, also incredibly limited. There is some reference to artists and intellectuals in the 1800s who had open relationships, open marriages, things like that, who spoke about it a little bit. But there has always been some social opprobrium for engaging in this behavior, and the possibility that you'll get some sort of negative reaction professionally or from the church or something like that. So again, this is very limited, and our understanding varies greatly because people may engage in open relationships without identifying as a person who does that. And there's really no way of knowing the percentage of people who have tried swinging or an open relationship or whatever. Some studies have found up to 15% of married couples have tried, and then others have found that it's only closer to 2 to 4. Some say that it's only like 1%. So it just depends on who did the study, how they ask the questions, and how they access the subjects for it. So we really don't know. Some of the earliest writing about it was in the 1950s. There were some military families who, because the guys who were all in a troop together were pretty close because, you know, they relied upon each other for life and death things, felt like a kinship that allowed them to open up their marriages as well. And key parties, theoretically, arose from this culture in the 1950s. Then we've got the 60s, where the invention of the pill and ideas about sexual liberation made monogamy seem a little less compulsory. And so people just started experimenting with a variety of different ways to exist. You all know all of this stuff already. You're looking at me like, yes, Thank you, person who was not alive in the 60s, for telling me how it went. So then in the 70s, we continue on with the promotion of open love and non-possessiveness as being a trait that we're going for. And then the 80s, this is still a continuation of, like, a lot of the same ideas that came up in the 60s continued to exist. And then the way that mainstream culture talked about open relationships has changed. With the rise of the 80s neoconservative, very religious tint to conservative politics, a lot of these things have been diminished in our ability to freely talk about them, but they have always continued to exist, obviously. And then the 90s, the internet happened. Yay, internet. So people who do everything in privacy can now find other people who also do things in privacy without having to run around with, like, a big sign on your forehead. You can still find people with shared interests and come together for all sorts of things, whether you're, like, hanging out and eating chocolate-covered pretzels, or if you want to meet in a dungeon and, like, pee on each other. Whatever you want to do. That's what the internet's for. That's why it exists. It's great. So the proliferation of the community has exploded since then. There's way more tourism for people in open relationships. The Lifestyles Incorporated Swingers Travel Agency exploded in the 90s. And there's, you know, of course, there's, like, Hedonism and other resorts you can specifically go to that are more touristy than necessarily the old school of being a community. But according to the North American Swing Club Association, it's internationally connected now in a way that it never could have been before. And the various incarnations continue to change as people continue to redefine how they want to live their lives and their relationships. And so I don't think any of this is new information to you. But the last big study on, like, who counts themselves as a swinger was done in the mid-90s. And they found that, by and large, it was mostly people who are white, middle class, in their 30s and 40s. They tended to be church-going. And they tended to be less racist, less sexist, less heterosexist than the general population, and often were conservative to moderate in their political orientation. This, of course, depends, but that was just the majority. That doesn't mean that applies to everybody, obviously. For the most part, people who answer this study said that opening up their relationship was beneficial to it. And there's always questions of study validity when you ask a question like that, because did they answer the survey because of that? Did they feel like they should take this survey to represent the lifestyle well? Would somebody who didn't have a good experience be less likely to take a survey? There's always these questions. But considering all the factors and taking it from a meta-analytic perspective, it looks like most people do really find the lifestyle to be helpful. Yes. Pension for violence in I personally don't know the answer to that. That could be done. I in terms of, like,
are they less likely to go and shoot somebody for whatever reason, good in road rage?
Is somebody who's in lifestyle less likely to be violent or engage in road rage? I would
too busy making love.
Too busy making love. I would just be guessing if I answered. Does anybody want to say anything? Like, answer into the mic what you think about that?
Yeah, I can take a shot at that. About 30 years ago, a guy named James Prescott, who was an anthropologist or a social anthropologist, evaluated all the societies in the world. That's probably not quite right. And he discovered that those societies that had very relaxed sexual standards were far less violent than those societies that had sexually restrictive childhood, teenage, and he lost his job. nobody wanted to hear those kinds of things. Sexual comfort was equated with nonviolence. And it was eventually published in the Journal of Atomic Scientists because nobody else would publish it. And he has a website. If you Google Jim Prescott or James Prescott, and the website is in Europe. And it's all of his work on anthropology, violence, sexuality. Now, that doesn't apply to American swingers, but the concept is still the same. Sexual freedom, it's better to have sex than to make war. You can't be angry when you're having an orgasm. All right, I'm done.
We've got somebody right behind you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here.
Just one level before.
Okay.
one level before that, comparisons have been made between chimpanzees and bonobos. Mm-hmm. Chimpanzees are very violent with each other, and bonobos don't have time, like we say.
Yeah, bonobos have replaced violence in their society.
Yeah, they're too busy playing around.
Yeah, rather than being angry when you first meet each other, you have sex. Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. I don't know like what the actual science is on it, but it certainly makes sense that a society that's very restrictive of sex, if you can restrict somebody's sexual freedom, I mean, you're controlling them. I mean, that's like the most basic intrinsic freedom, like whether or not somebody can have pleasure. I mean, if you can control that, what can't you control? And
sure. Yeah, well, they've been doing it.
Yeah. All right. Perfectly. So that's basically about what I had to say, because I figure y'all know anything that I'm going to have to offer. I would like to start hearing what y'all have to say. Would you like to start? You don't want to be recorded. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
How Monica Lewinsky changed the landscape overall. So, a couple different things come to mind about that. One of the first ones is that, and this probably isn't what you were referencing, but... when Bill Clinton said, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman," it did start a cultural conversation about what counts as sex. And for many young people coming up, their idea of having had sex does not count all the different ways that you can get a sexually transmitted infection. It doesn't necessarily count all the different ways you can give someone pleasure or an orgasm. They count the very heterocentric, phallocentric idea of a penis enters a vagina, and that's sex. And everything else is something else. So you can, you can spend 8 hours going down on each other, and you're still a virgin. Isn't that convenient? That's awesome.
8 hours.
Yeah. Maybe you want to take a break for. To take a break for food or water sometimes through it.
That puts a real value on virginity.
Yeah, that it does. That is the placement of the idea that virginity is somehow intrinsically valuable. And this is a very ancient idea, especially female virginity is the thing that has monetary value on it. You want to grab the mic? Or?
Yeah, sure. Our dear Mr. Clinton, who I didn't like, kind of said it was okay because he got basically a blowjob from Marilyn, whoever her name was.
Monica.
But he was the same person who fired Jocelyn Edwards for suggesting that children masturbate instead of making babies.
Yeah, former Surgeon General Jocelyn Elders had suggested that part of sexuality education include talking about masturbation, which... if you don't come from a place of extreme sexual fear, that makes absolute sense. It's completely safe. They're, a person having sex with themselves is not going to get themselves pregnant accidentally. They're not going to accidentally transmit anything to anyone. And they get to learn what they like. And oh my God, can you imagine actually pleasure being a thing that matters? And like
no.
Something that we value? What? I think that as far as Clinton goes, he is an example of a moderate Republican president. That's me, yeah. Sort of. Yeah. I mean, he was. I understand he registered that way.
There's been a lot of political pressure to get rid of her.
Well, certainly.
That's absolutely true. I think that's the same.
Democrats cave.
Yeah.
Every time.
the same thing that happened with sort of the Defense of Marriage Act and what happened with the 96 Welfare Reform Act, which is what made abstinence-only sex education the law of the land. I think a lot of these things are just extremely political pressure. And he is certainly not the first person in a position of power to be a hypocrite and to take advantage of his power. I don't know if I've actually answered your question at all. When the Clinton-Lewinsky controversy came up, there was also an opportunity for discussion. What if Hillary knew about it? What if they had an understanding that this was okay? And of course, they would never be able to say that if they wanted to hold office again, because that's scary to some people that don't understand the concept of how could you do that? And then, like, how could you allow your partner to do that? The comment was about a age difference between people who were raised with the idea that a woman having multiple sexual partners was a slut and that term's a bad thing, versus women who were raised later with the idea that multiple partners, the term independent contractor, like sexuality is important to them and they're free to experience sexuality in the same way that a man would. And I don't know if it's like a black or white sort of distinction like that. I think there's definitely still a very large amount of female sex shame that exists. And I think that women growing up now still definitely feel that. They may be more able to brush it off because women in general, I think, have a lot more freedoms than they did in the past. But there's definitely still a lot of slut shaming in our culture, which is part of why the slut walk. There's a slut walk coming up in Philadelphia also. Is everyone familiar with this?
No, explain.
Okay. Here's the story of the slut walk. All right. So this was actually a few months ago in Toronto. There was a woman, that wasn't even like a precipitating event. A Toronto police officer was speaking to a high school about a bunch of stuff. And I think sort of made an off-the-cuff remark, which I hope he terribly regrets. But basically he was just giving the old chestnut to girls that, you know, if they stop being such sluts and stop dressing like that, you know, just you know, do basic things to protect yourself from being raped. The idea being there that, of course, it's the victim's fault. because, you know, we admonish girls, you know, don't get too drunk, watch your drink, don't go out alone, don't dress this way, blah, 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 as opposed to telling all of society, don't put things in people's drinks, don't rape them, don't go up to a drunk person. Yeah. So it started off this whole movement of slut walks, and the first one was in Toronto, and it was a bunch of people who came out and were like, no, sluts say yes. Rape is when they say not yes. So we will proudly march saying we're taking back the name of slut. Slut is people who are proud to say yes when they want to say yes, and they'll say no when they want to say no, and we should not have to be ashamed of that. And it started off a movement, and now there have been slut walks all throughout North America, and the Philly one is upcoming. The date is not yet settled. I believe they're dealing with the permits, you know, from the city so they can walk, because I think it's going to start at, like, the art museum.
That's funny. I walk all around the city.
Well, the idea is that
the perpetual permit.
Yeah, so there's definitely, there's a movement of, like, pro slut, like, I'm in charge of my sexuality, thank you, that sort of thing is definitely coming up, and we're still trying to make a movement. But the fact that this walk exists means that there's still a tide we have to push against. So I think that there is definitely a change coming, but I also feel that for a lot of women who grew up with, for instance, Roe v. Wade always being the case, there's definitely a conservatism among young people that is much more ardent than I think the generation previous. So I think it just it's constantly moving. Did you want to come?
I've actually found, contrary to what you said, and I'm new to the lifestyle, but I have belonged to various gyms since the 70s. I feel that younger women are much more prudish than they used to be. I remember going to the gym in the 70s and the 80s and women in the locker room. You walk to the shower, you take your shower, you walk back to your locker, you get dressed, just nobody thinking about the fact that they're naked, just being very natural. I find younger people now, and the older women are still like that. I find a lot of younger women are so ashamed to show their bodies or for somebody to see their body. And when they see a woman naked in the gym, they get embarrassed. They get dressed by holding their towels. I've even seen women get in the jacuzzi with a couple of towels wrapped around them. Yeah, I know. So my personal observation, again, no scientific thing. I don't know, maybe when they're not at the gym, they're fucking everybody they meet, but, you know, they seem very, very prudish to me. It's almost to the point where it's annoying because you need to walk around them and they're doing such gyrations with trying to keep a boob from showing while they're changing their clothes that, you know, you just want to... Yeah, did you?
Yeah, I did.
Oh.
I've read articles on
it.
Did you?
Okay.
I just wanted to add to the talk about sluts and women's perceptions of themselves, that there's also the male side of it, and something that I'm always having to have to deal with when I go to parties, whether it's just purely a nudist party or a lifestyle party, is men who seem to think that just because you bare your breasts or you allow some men that you're comfortable with to do intimate things to you that you normally wouldn't let someone do in public, it kind of gives all, men feel it gives all men a license to come up to you and just do whatever they want without asking. And so I'm like almost, outside of our DVS events, we don't have that as an issue too much unless it's someone new to our organization. But outside of DVS, it is an issue, like the swing clubs or the spa parties.
I think that's in both very excellent points. On the prudery thing, I agree. I think that for all people, both male and female, there's an increased level of visibility media-wise of what bodies are supposed to look like. So it's both a variety of sexual shame and also like body image concerns. That, like, unless you think, like, if I'm going to be naked, then that must mean I think I'm hot shit. And, like, by being naked in public, you are telling the world that this is perfect and therefore, free from criticism, et cetera. So I think that for some women, it's both a matter of, like, the slut thing, but also the I don't want to look like I think that I'm perfect because we have to constantly apologize for our natural states and our humanness. But you also brought up an excellent point about consent and the idea that if you are open about your sexuality, that gets misinterpreted by people who see it in a very black and white way as being openness to free game. Yeah, just free to go. Anybody want to say anything about consent or experience with that?
I've been in lifestyle many years, but as an adult before being formally into Synergy and into lifestyle, I had this mental conception of I'm approaching a doorway and I'm going to step over the threshold into a new who knows what. And it was very frightful in terms of anticipation. However, once I get over to the other side of this threshold, I find that it's a lot more structured, it's a lot more helpful, appreciative, warm, than anybody on the other side of the door thinks it is. So there's more here given to people by way of help and inclusion or exclusion than in the straight society, where you may find support, you know, in special kinds of groups, but by and large, the world around you is not helpful.
On that note, I'd like to start just asking, did you have something to say?
I just wanted to go back to the woman who spoke about, you know, being in a party and being, you know, once she was dressed or undressed in a particular way, and you know how it was all of a sudden now a free for all for and I just you know as a man, I've always been bothered by the fact that a lot of men don't respect like the conversation, the asking like, would it be okay? Is it all right? Like just because this person's with you, does that doesn't give me the right to step in also, and you know I just think a lot of I'm a bit categorized, you know, a bit broad brushing, but a lot of men don't respect the fact that that women, if anything, I say, have more of a say in the situation. So I don't have any rights over any, you know, anybody else, male or female, but in particular in our society, it tends to be a more masculine-driven society, and I've always had challenges around that because if anything, I think it's the other way around. I know all the women know that for a fact, but us men just haven't realized that yet. But you know, I just was really speaking to. I've actually been in experiences to sort of stand up for the women when men have stepped in, and it just has always been a situation where I've wanted to make a difference.
Very cool. Anybody want to say anything more on that?
Will you tell us how we can get more information on the slut walk and be supportive of that?
That'd be great. We could join it as a group.
Yeah, can we guy sluts come to?
Oh, everyone, everybody! It's definitely not just a female thing. Their best information, I would say, actually would be on their Facebook group page for the Slut Walk. If just in general, Google Slut Walk, and you will find lots of different ways to get involved with the movement in a variety of different ways.
I'll post it to our news announcement calendar of the website.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, we don't have the exact date again. They're still waiting on the permits, but once the date is available, I can send it to you. It was originally scheduled actually for next weekend, but because they didn't have enough time for the permits, it is now currently just up in the air, but it probably will be soon. So as soon as I know it, I'll let you know. And anybody is welcome. It's not simply a woman's issue, so it's certainly not just a woman's activism thing. Yeah. I like it. Slut pride. What's up?
I like it. Are they raising money? Is that the purpose?
No, no. You show up. You can have crazy signs, say whatever you want to say. People at the other ones have been, you know, dressing in what they would like to identify as slut wear. But you can wear whatever you want. You can bring whatever you want. You just show up and you walk. And the whole idea is that we're all sex positive, and we're all there for an awareness raising idea. So it's not like a fundraiser for cancer or anything like that. It's just a political action.
I were in Stockholm last year, and we just happened to be there on the day that they had the gay parade. It must have been a 5 or 6 hour parade, and the gay firemen went by, and the gay policemen went by, and the gay army went by, and all these strange people. Everybody was laughing and hugging. It was the funnest thing I ever just stumbled into. They don't have the problems that we have here as far as our identities and our sexualities. It was just really cool.
The gay pride march is actually in Philly today.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's Pride weekend right now. Good.
Yeah, well, I think, Timmery, when I was listening to one of your podcasts, well, most of your podcasts, you emphasize sex positive, and I think that's just such a great term. And, you know, I've been in the lifestyle for, well, I guess, 25 years, ever since my wife dragged me kicking and screaming and, you know, and she was there first, and you know, over the years, I found that DVS, Delaware Valley Synergy, has been a family, and you know, just really caring people. And we talk about no, and I think that was probably at every orientation that we've had, and every time somebody talks about it, is that no is the most important word in the lifestyle, and you know, respecting that and respecting women and men, it's difficult. And my wife has said, you know, she has difficulty saying no, and it's something I think that both men and women have to understand where they're coming from and what they want. But you know, it's Synergy's been an incredibly supportive and wonderful group. They're friends, and
It's the reason that I joined. I'm relatively new. I joined in December, and I went to the orientation. Brought me in. They're old friends. they talked about the rules, and I thought that was so great, because that is something, I'm with you on that. It's so annoying. Well, I'm letting this guy rub his hands all over me. Yeah. No, that doesn't mean that you, whoever you are, can do the same thing. And I really, when I heard about the rules and how important it was, I said, yeah, I could definitely get into being in this. Definitely.
I have a logistical question about this. So,
Our guidelines are that a person, anyway, man or woman, can say no and should say no if that's what they feel at any point in an interaction. So it may be the initial contact. It could be at the end of a dance. It could be after you've already gone up the stairs. Or in any part of lovemaking, you say no, that's it.
So is the onus on the person to say no?
Yes.
Or is the onus on the person to ask permission?
Personal responsibility to say no, or some version of no politely, as when it is so, when no is the proper feeling.
You can't really say no if you've not been asked.
Right. Okay. So then my question would be, do people say, may I? Like, how is this negotiated? Is it?
They just come right out and ask. Like, yeah. If I'm at a nudist resort, and I guess men like my tits, and they will ask. They'll say, can I touch? And depending on my comfort level, I may say yes or I may say no. But at least they're asking. But I also get a lot of people who don't even bother asking. They just reach out and touch. And I'm like... I'm like the woman over there who said that, you know, her husband said she has trouble saying no. I'm like that as well. I've had a lot of trouble learning to say no. I'm getting better at it. And something else I'm finding I have to do now is I have to exert myself when I'm not being asked to let the other person know that it's not cool that they've gone into my boundary without asking. And I'm getting better at it, as my husband will vouch for me. And I think that it's a service. I think of it as a service that I'm performing for other women in the lifestyle to kind of try and educate these men that they need to ask. Some men never learn, though.
I hang out a lot in the polyamorous community. And there's a famous T-shirt that's been around for about 10 years now, and it's usually worn by women, that says, just because I'm polyamorous doesn't mean I want to have sex with you.
Now, I have a couple questions, probably one to you personally, just to see, like, as you've studied and went through this whole, like, what you do in a personal practice. And then the other thing is more on when we talk about, like, the shame of women and the conversation that still exists in society today, what do you see as some of the forefront movements that are helping to shift that? You know, personally, I've been in Tantra and going through that practice, and I think there's a lot of sexual healing in that, which also opens it up to lifestyles of polyamory and things like that. So two questions.
Okay, so the first question is to clarify, just asking how my study has impacted my personal experience?
Yes.
Okay. So on the first part, how my study has impacted my personal experience, I don't know. I think I was very fortunate to be raised by people who were far more educated and open-minded than the surroundings. I grew up in a very small town in the Midwest, and the prevailing notion was certainly not liberality by any perspective or definition of the word. I was raised by people who very much valued free thinking and learning and reading what interests you, etc., like that. So I've always found sexuality very interesting, and I think that I've always wanted, I was a person who was like, wow, this is super fun and interesting, and I've feel supported by my upbringing to go explore whatever interests me. And so I have found a mixture of like my own personal journey that I think everybody goes on as you find out what you like, what you don't like, what you want to try, what you don't want to try, was mixed in with the academic side of like, I was fortunate enough that because I felt comfortable reading about sexuality, I knew about how to be safe. And I knew about, in terms of both STI prevention and pregnancy prevention and stuff like that. But I'm not really sure if I'm answering your question at all. I don't know. Not at all, because I don't really, I'm just making it up as I go along. But I guess it's sort of like, I don't know, my academic understanding of sexuality and my personal life, you know, both are continuously growing, as I hope everybody's are. I definitely had some degree of the academic background gave me some insulation. For instance, I ran into somebody that had gone to high school with, and he was like, this is speaking about himself. He's like, I've gotten way cooler since high school. I'm like, true, true. You turned into a hipster and that turned out to be cool in 2010. Good job. And then I just asked him, you know, like, what about me? Like, how about your perception of me in high school and how did that change? He's like, well, we all thought you were a slut, but now that you've got this degree, it's like legitimized it. And the irony was that it wasn't necessarily that I was all that much more like sexually active than anybody else. It was just that I wasn't afraid to talk about it. And that's really where like a lot of the fear came, because like people my same age probably had experienced things that I had not, and possibly with more people than I had. But if they didn't talk about it without shame, then the perception was that they were less slutty, I guess. And so I've sort of been able to brush off accusations of being a bad person or this or that or whatever, because I was like, I have all this stuff behind me that tells me, you know, science says you're stupid and I'm fine. So I guess that's how that's gone. And then your second question about ways of changing sexual prudery and sexual shame, is that
yes.
The second question? Okay. Yes. I think that's definitely a journey that is person to person. I mean, you can find that anywhere if it's what's right for you. For some people, as you mentioned, like Tantra is the way to do it. For other people, some women find an incredible amount of satisfaction and confidence from finding a sport that they're really into. Like a perfect example that comes to mind for me is a friend that I had who got out of an abusive relationship because she got into rugby, and it taught her about confidence and assertiveness and finding a group of women that she could rely upon and who would back her up. And if somebody was coming at her, you know, she knew that they were all in this together. So I think it's entirely up to you, whether you want it to be a political action, whether you want to read, you know, Bitch magazine, whether you want to have deaf poetry jams or music where you get to say what you're into and hear from other people who have stuff that you find interesting. It's the options are endless, and you just have to, like, when you find something that you like, run to it and find out what else is around that. So it sounds like Tantra has worked for several people that I've spoken to here. Is that true? Or maybe?
Well, it's a path that you stay on.
Okay.
You don't start Tantra and then in and out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a path.
Okay.
I like that. Now
it's Dr. Slut.
Dr. Slut, yes.
Yeah.
So I got that going for me. I want to start asking people about, several people have started their statements with when I got in. And I would like to know how people got involved, maybe with this group in particular, or just in lifestyle of whatever way it has played out for you. If anybody wants to share on that.
Way back when, in the 60s, when I was married and eventually had two children and spent 25 years with the woman, and eventually got divorced, I always thought I could love more than one person. I didn't have a name for it then, however. We eventually got divorced, and in the 80s, I spent 10 or 15 years as a single guy living in a bachelor pad in the city, went out dancing, and I had a lot of women. Eventually, I was a school teacher, and somewhere in the late 90s, one of my high school kids gave me a DVS newsletter, which I read. And I said, wow, this is pretty cool. This is very interesting. So I went to an orientation, and I was absolutely amazed at the people I met. They were educated. They were well-dressed. The conversations were intellectual in nature, which appeals to me. And I thought, wow, I have to join this group, which I did. And I've been in it for about 10 or 11 years now. And I met my dear wife here in DVS Party. And if people want to know about the lifestyle, and I'm just looking at her next to one of her lovers holding hands, and he had his arm around her for a minute ago, because they do like each other, and that's okay. And it's just a really neat lifestyle. And it's free, and I like women, and I love loving women. And half of my lovers are in this room right now, and I love each one of them. And that's how I got into it.
Well, I guess... you know, as I mentioned, my wife brought me into the lifestyle. Let me just clarify something I said a little while ago. It's not that she's just a girl that can't say no. She finds that she doesn't like to be put in that position of having to say no. And I think that's more clear. She will definitely say no. Says no to me sometimes. But that's anyway. But I guess. From an intellectual standpoint, I mean, we've been in the lifestyle for 25 years or so, and she brought me in, and her friends were in Synergy, so her friends were my friends, and we drifted in and out and drifted away, and we said, "Gee, you know, we just like these people, and they're like family, so we want to stay close to them." Recently, and I guess. very recently, in the last 7 or 8 months, I was saying before this, I joined a gym and I started working out and I started listening to podcasts. And the first podcast I found was Sex with Jaya, which is how I found Timory, because she was interviewed by Jaya. And but I started listening to other podcasts, and there's Life on the Swing Set, which is a relatively new podcast about swinging. And I had always thought about swinging as just really, really casual sex. You know, people go to a club, bump into somebody and drag them off into the corner and have sex with them. And these people in this podcast are very much like we are. They're caring people. Most of the people that they have relationships with are people that they have relationships with. And I think that's really important, because I think it's all about relationships. It's not casual. It's extending a handshake or a kiss to something much more intimate and much more loving and encompassing, but it's something that you want to share with a person that's really somebody who's become a friend. And I think that's a lot what it's about.
There's a now dead polyamorist from Philadelphia named George Marvel, who was a polyamory activist 10 years ago, and he said, and I quote, "With swinging you get sex, with polyamory you get breakfast." I'll tell my story too. I'm a child of the 50s. I was born in 1934, and so I was I grew up in high school in the 1950s, which was the height of sexual restriction. And there was no sex except in the backseat of my 1948 DeSoto. And there was no sex. The gentleman across the street over here will know exactly what I'm talking about. And I was married in college at 20, because that's how you got laid in the 1950s. Well, not all the time, but that's how you assured you were going to get laid. And I was married forever, and I always had the feeling that something was wrong. I always wanted to have sex or intimate relationships with somebody else than my wife. Not that I didn't love my wife or that I wanted to maintain the relationship with my wife. I wanted some sexual variety. That was hard to find. And how did you hook up? Well, I wasn't going to put an ad in a swingers magazine, God forbid. And I wasn't very good at bars and picking up women at bars. I just didn't know how to do that. And it wasn't until the internet came along and the polyamory community came along that I actually began to see a way of having loving relationships with people who were not my wife, and have my wife or girlfriend approve of these loving, friendly, comfortable, intimate relationships without threatening my partnership or my marriage. And in Delaware Valley Synergy, I have met more people who are my friends, loving friends, than ever in the straight life. And I'll never go back to the old 1950s stuff. I have real friends here.
You couldn't find it, so no, anyway.
Okay. I'm also of the same generation. Whoops. I graduated high school in the mid-1950s and went to college and met a guy. We started playing around in my junior year in college, and then we got married about a year later. My parents thought long engagements were not very wise. But then I found that one man was less than what I wanted, and I would look around and I'd have an affair. And that would last a while, and then there would be a different affair. And then that marriage ended, and there were some other guys, and then I married somebody else. I married somebody else, and so on. And somewhere along the line, you know, and then I had this word in my head that said, this multiplicity was, I'm trying to find that word, I've lost it, the guy, that put down word that's for multiple acts of sex with woman.
Promiscuous,
yeah. I'm not, promiscuous didn't fit. And so I was able at some point in the 70s to switch over to non-monogamous. And then I was completely comfortable with whatever I did. However, having affairs outside of marriage was still a problem until I decided, no, I need to be in an open relationship where my partner comes from the same kind of attitudes, that openness is the way of life, that's what we are, and to live otherwise is putting constraints that don't fit and that feel like a cage. In fact, I can remember an image that I went through. I think it was getting out of my second marriage. I've been married 3 times. I had this dream about being in a cage, but it was only my head in the cage, and around my neck was my wedding ring. So it was just the neck and the head inside this gold cage. It was pretty grim.
I hate to keep talking, but I love to keep talking. There's been an academic study of swinging done by a guy named Kurt Bergstrand at Bellarmine University in Louisville. And he wrote a book. I consulted on the book. That's why I know about it. He interviewed and got anecdotes from 1,000 swingers and compared their numbers with the National Social Study Survey or something like, there's a national survey, asking pretty much the same questions. And all of his data was recently published about 2 years ago now in a book called Swinging in America. And it's a really, really neat academic deconstruction of monogamy. And he takes monogamy apart and says it's not working. Now, it works for some people. It doesn't work for others. And how do we allow the others to express their sexual needs? So if anybody wants to know about the swing community, the first half of the book is all about swinging. And by the way, half of the swingers are Republicans. Just thought I'd let you know. And the other half of the book is about monogamy. And he ultimately concludes, and now this is a guy who is not polyamorous, not swinger. He's an academic sociologist. He's a professor of sociology. And he says, and concludes, the swingers have longer, happier marriages than the traditional monogamists who cheat. Because the swingers are all open about it, and one of the partners will say, well, let's go to the swing club tonight. And he'll say, great, let's go. And it all works because the communication goes back and forth, and they get their variety needs met, which traditional society won't allow. And therapists, by the way, don't think variety is a good thing. The name of the book is Swinging in America, Kurt Bergstrand, 2 years ago. Read it.
This great interview will continue on the next episode of Sex with Tim Marie, podcast edition. You'll love it. Hey, loyal Sex with Tim Marie listeners. We have something finally to pay you back. So you've been listening to us rant about sex, and we appreciate you so much that we have prizes and presents. So popporn.com has gifted us with a selection of lovely porn titles, and we are going to be giving them away to Sex with Tim Marie listeners who like Sex with Tim Marie on Facebook. So very easily you can enter to win new porn, probably on a weekly basis or so. We're going to be giving a free one away. So facebook.com/ Sex with Tim Marie, or just search Sex with T-I-M-A-R-E-E, and you should like it. And if you are already, if you've already liked it, you're already entered. But if you add in, now you are entered. And if you interact on the wall for Sex with Tim Marie, you'll also be given additional entries for liking things, commenting on articles, etc., writing on the wall, whatever. So enter now by liking Sex with Tim Marie on Facebook or interacting with the Facebook wall, Sex with Tim Marie. So thank you for listening and enjoy. Thank you for listening to Sex with Tim Marie. Please check out more from sexwithtimmarie.com, where Monday through Friday there's new content, including polls, weekly sex columns, and Friday sex links. And if you have any questions, comments, or violent reactions, please email them to sexwithtimmarie@gmail.com. That's sexwithtimmarie@gmail.com. And thank you.